Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Elhamdülillahi Rabbil alemin. Ve salatu ve selamu ala seyyidil mursalin ve ala alihi ve sahbihi ve baraka ve sallama teslimen kethiren ila yevmiddin emme ba'd. There are normally many questions about who can miss the fasting in Ramadan and then make them up later. Those who are absolved from fasting during the month of Ramadan, who don't have to make it up later, who can pay a fidya. So inshallah, this next section will deal with those different circumstances, inshallah. Firstly, the following people are exempted from fasting in Ramadan. When we mean exempted, it doesn't mean that they're forgiven, that they don't have to make it up later. It just means that they are not obliged to fast during the month of Ramadan. They might have to make it up later, or if they can't do that, then they would have to pay for it. A sick person who fears that the illness will worsen. This is not a basic illness that would just become a bit worse, but we're talking about something that would be of significant inconvenience or discomfort. We're not just developing a bit of a headache, but we're talking about something that would really like put the person, make the person bedridden. It would cause extreme headaches, migraines, and any other kind of illness. Let me put it this way. Although it's permissible for a person with an illness to not fast, it's always better to fast. The amount of reward that is gained during the month of Ramadan for one fast is so great, it's so much, that if a person fasted for all their life afterwards, it cannot reach the same concentrated amount of reward for one day of fast. Now obviously, I would assume that if somebody had a valid excuse not to fast and they just couldn't, and they would have if they had been able to, maybe Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would reward them for that by keeping the qada and doing the makeup of the fast. But if somebody didn't do that and they just took the concession lightly and they just kind of took it, it's up to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah knows. So we leave it to Allah. But that hadith is that a single day of fasting of Ramadan, if it's missed, it cannot be made up by fasting for the rest of your life. That's how much each day of Ramadan contains of reward. It's just so much. A pregnant woman or nursing woman with the condition for each to have a legitimate fear for the baby or for herself. So if they feel that because they're in pregnancy, because they're nursing the baby, if they were to fast, it would have a negative impact on their nursing or their pregnancy, then they can absorb it. This is not something to determine by oneself. It's normally determined through consultation with a Muslim professional physician, medical doctor, who understands it, or from prior experience. And another thing to also bear in mind here is that it's a lot of the time it's to do with the foods you eat. So if you consult a dietitian, and many of our older women are dietitians, they'll tell you the right foods to eat that will produce milk, especially if it's for nursing mothers. There are certain foods that you eat that would create a lot more milk, and there are numerous women who are nursing and who fast as well. And from history we know as well that in fact some of them would try to also make it that their babies fasted. I'm not encouraging that in a long day of fast like this, right? Because I don't know if our babies have that same endurance, or our mothers. But the fact is, I'm not encouraging that, but I'm just saying that, meaning I'm not encouraging that you make the baby fast, right? But I am encouraging that you do consult a dietitian, you try to find out foods. There is something they make with a special type of flour, I forget what it's called, and they make a broth kind of with it with milk, and that's supposed to produce a lot of milk. So there are numerous things like that can produce a lot of milk. And there are certain foods as well that even men should eat at suhoor time, as opposed to lots of carbs and rice. Rice is full of carbs, so what it does is that it gives you a kind of a high, and then it diminishes. Eating more protein with some carbs and fat. In fact, carbs with fat is a lot better than just carbs on its own. So it's to consult a dietitian and to eat the right foods, especially during this time. Taking some multivitamins might help as well for a lot of people, because if our diet is deficient in various vitamins and minerals, that could mean that it would have an adverse effect on our body. We won't have the energy to keep the to go through the day. And then what happens for many people, if they're not having a good diet as well, and the shaitan is with them, it just creates this feeling of depression. It just creates this feeling that when is Ramadan going to end? Because they want to fast, they have to fast, but they're not enjoying it because they can't do much else. So that's why I think it gives a better experience that you can enjoy your worship. Otherwise you sit to pray Quran, read Quran, and you fall asleep because you're deficient. A lot of the time it's just the diet. It's really just the diet and exercise and health condition. So I mean I've been told that multivitamins, you know, from experience, they are extremely useful, good ones, not cheap ones that you just find. We're talking about, you know, good multivitamins and minerals. One good company that I know from experience is really good is Solgar, Solgar. They have a multivitamin supplement called VM75, and it's very potent. Don't just buy anything from a dollar store, from a pound store or something like that. You know, that's just some hastily put together stuff. I mean, for vitamins you need to buy good stuff. Make sure it's vegetarian and all the rest of it. But most of that really helps. Really helps. So yeah, look into a good diet, especially this year when the fasts are long. So going back to a nursing woman, she should try to eat foods that will produce more milk and try to go through the day. If she does realize that she's weaker than other people, she's got a condition maybe, and the baby is going to be harmed, then she can forego the fast and keep it later. She can't pay fidya. She's not allowed to pay fidya, but what she can do is that she has to wait until she's better, and then after that she will keep the fasts. The only person that can pay a fidya is the person who has lost the possibility of fasting for the rest of their lives, because they are on medication every few hours, or they just don't have the capacity to fast, or some other situation that they have, some other medical condition they have. One who is undergoing severe thirst from which he fears death, dehydration, something happened, it's not permissible to play so much football or any other sports that would lead to such dehydration, that could lead to breaking your fast or weakening you. It's obviously wrong to play if it's going to make you break your fast because of dehydration, and it's makruh if it's going to weaken you from other worships. So you play a game of football in the afternoon, and after that you just have to sleep, you miss your prayers, you don't do any other worship. It's only 1 month, it's great benefit in it. We just need to do our best in that. Play football at night if you have to, or if you are fine in the morning, you can do it in the morning. Or a traveller, yet for him to fast is more preferable if it does not harm him. Some people understand the hadith about, there's a hadith about travellers not fasting. It's just that they're given a concession. It's not that they are disallowed from fasting. Some people think that travellers are disallowed from fasting, so if you're travelling you are not allowed to fast. That's wrong. See, what happened is that there were a group of people who, when they were travelling, fasted. Another group didn't. The group that fasted became extremely dehydrated, and there were some serious issues there. The Prophet ﷺ said that they were disobedient. Why did they not break the fast and put on such a severe critical burden on them? Because of that, some people try to say that it's not permissible to fast while travelling. It's just that this was a special condition of these people. It's permissible to fast if you've got a relaxed journey. Nowadays journeys are not that difficult, where you're walking for miles and miles. So it's completely permissible, in fact better to fast if you can fast. So anyway, about the fear of becoming ill or worsening, the fear of course must be a genuine fear, not just a delusion or an excuse. For the sick person, pregnant woman, nursing woman, the condition for permissibility of breaking the fast is not simply a delusion of potential harm, but rather a legitimate fear recognized by the sacred law. This entails either past experience, even if someone else with the same sickness, it's past experience that yes, this normally happens, or an obvious sign of potential harm, or an opinion of a qualified Muslim physician who does not sin in public. The same would apply for a healthy person that has a legitimate fear based on one of the above indications of becoming ill. One of the scholars adds that if one were to break the fast without one of the above indication, then he would have to perform expiation, while most people are unfortunately completely unaware of this ruling. So if somebody doesn't have a legitimate fear and just arbitrarily just broke the fast on a small issue, on a small excuse, they would have to make expiation as well. Just consult a scholar if you have a confusion about it. Now, about a traveller, what kind of a traveller are we talking about? It's someone who at the time of Fajr is already on travel, not somebody who's still going to travel that day. So if you're at home, you're not allowed to not fast, even if you're going to travel after Fajr. So the condition is that he initiates the journey and is also already outside the city limits, or is already a traveller at the onset of Fajr. Otherwise, if he is a resident when Fajr enters, then he must fast that day, even if he travels after Fajr. If he still breaks this fast, then if such a person does then break the fast, again, because it was not a full crime as such, there was an element of doubt there, he won't have to do kafara. So let's just say a person who was at home, started fasting, has to fast, and then after that traveled and then broke the fast. Now, because there's an element of doubt there, because he's a traveller, travellers don't have to fast, although he had to fast because he was at home in the beginning, he won't have to do kafara. He'll have to do a qada, but he won't have to do a kafara. I think you're understanding now the qada and kafara, how that works. For any fast that's broken, except the fly going into the mouth, you have to make up the fast, whether you do it purposefully or whether you do it by accident. The fast breaks. The only difference is that in one it's sinful, in the other one it's not sinful. And the kafara is only when it's a complete crime, when it's a complete sin, when it's a complete purposeful act, and there's no doubt to absolve him, like he was a traveller, he was sick, or something like that. If one who breaks the fast due to a valid excuse, as listed above, passes away before having the chance to make up the days missed, then it is not mandatory to make up those days. Somebody had qada fasts to make. They'd been sick, they hadn't fasted. And then after that, before they could find a time when they were not sick, when they had become well now, they passed away. Does he have to make kafara? Sorry, does he have to make qada? No. Because fasting was not necessary on them. Fasting was not necessary on them, and they did not find any time in which fasting became necessary on them to be able to fast, because they were sick right through. But if somebody did have enough days in which they could have fasted, they had become better but they hadn't fasted, now they died, they should have given a wasiyah, they should have made a bequest to have this paid on their behalf. When making up fast in general, one doesn't have to do them one after the other, could do them separately. The only thing you have to do together is what? The kafara, the penalty, the expiation, 60 days together. The fidya payment for a very old person who is unable to fast is half a sa'. A sa' is a measure of 2.2 kilograms of wheat, or its equivalent in monetary value. Entertaining guests. Sorry, a person performing a voluntary fast may break it without an excuse, according to one narration. A person who's doing a nafl fast just feels like breaking it. Some scholars say it's okay to break it just like that. You have to do a qada, but are you sinful for breaking it? Some say no, others say yes. So you're wasting your worship. You have to do a qada according to everybody though. What are some of the valid excuses for breaking a fast, a nafl fast? You had a nafl fast, are there some valid excuses? Of course, all of those extreme excuses where you feel sick and ill and all that, those will allow you to break any fast. But are there any lighter excuses to break a nafl fast with? Entertaining guests is a valid excuse for both the host and the guest. So if you go to somebody's house and they put out something and you're keeping a nafl fast, you can break the fast. If they're very good and close to you, then, and it won't offend them, then you can say, I'm fasting, if you don't mind, I won't eat. Otherwise, in some cases, it's actually better to break it so that you don't put them under, you don't embarrass them. Likewise for the host, just feeding the guest, and like, I'm fasting, I'm just feeding you. Sounds a bit strange. So the host can break it as well. If one breaks a voluntary fast after having started it, in any case, it is mandatory wajib for him to make it up, except for the days in which it is prohibited to fast, namely the 2 days of Eid and 3 days of the Tashrik. What that's saying, we already know the first part of it, that nafil fast you have to make up if you break them. But what about if you started the nafil fast on the day of Eid or Tashrik, Ayyam al-Tashrik, the 5 prohibited days? You have to break them, you can't continue them, but you don't have to keep a qada in this place because you are not supposed to fast anyway. So you don't have to make them up. If a person makes an unspecified vow to fast, unspecified vow is, I'll fast 2 days next month, not particular days. Meaning I'll fast two days next month if this and this happens. You have to obviously verbalize it. It's not something just in the mind, it has to be verbalized. Or a vow to fast upon fulfilling of a particular condition, which then occurs. If he comes home, I will fast. And then he came home. Then he must fulfill his vow, and Allah knows best. This is just a few rulings on vowing. What do you call nadhar? You know this opinion here that a person performing a voluntary fast may break it without an excuse, according to one narration. This is Allama Shurumbulani's personal opinion on this. The stronger opinion is that you can't just break it just like that. You shouldn't break it just like that. This is Allama Shurumbulani's personal opinion. It was kept here to be faithful to the original, but in the footnote it does clarify that the stronger opinion, as I mentioned earlier, is that you can't break it without a valid excuse. And the valid excuses is, one of the valid excuses is like a guest situation, host guest situation. Now about this host and guest situation, there are some conditions there. It's not general. The host would be offended if the guest did not eat. So as I mentioned, if he's not going to be offended, close friend, you go there all the time, then it's no problem. Or the guest would feel uncomfortable eating by themselves. So if the guest would feel uncomfortable, then you have to join them. The person is confident that he will make it up. If a person would just about manage to keep a fast, right? And it was like the only day he could have fasted, and then he happens to be in this situation, and he fears that if he breaks it, he's not going to be able to make it up, then he has the right to carry on. The fast is broken before Tahwatul Kubra. This is only permissible to break before that halfway mark. After that, you're really wasting yourself. You've got 3 hours left, 4 hours left, and you're like breaking it. Next section is about i'tikaf, because i'tikaf has to do with Ramadan, and there's a special i'tikaf during the month of Ramadan. So they're going to mention some of the masail of i'tikaf here. The i'tikaf is a spiritual retreat at the end of the day. It's moving away from everybody else and going and isolating yourself in one place. So it's a spiritual retreat. You're retreating from people. The spiritual retreat is of three types. The mandatory one, when one makes a vow to perform it. I mean, there's no fard i'tikaf. You know, there is a fard fast, right? Which is Ramadan fasts. There are fard prayers. Is there a fard i'tikaf? There's no such thing as a fard i'tikaf, right? There is a wajib i'tikaf. The wajib i'tikaf is the one that you necessitate on yourself, right? It's the one you necessitate on yourself by vowing. If this happens, I'm gonna do 3 days of i'tikaf. Emphasize communal sunnah. So it's not an individual sunnah, it's a communal sunnah. You know these 10 days of i'tikaf that happen in our masajid that people do? It's not an individual sunnah. If it was an individual sunnah mu'akkada, everyone, one of us would have to do it. But it's a communal sunnah in the sense that if one person in every locality, in each locality where 5 daily prayers are taking place, does it, it absolves everybody else from missing that sunnah. So you should actually go and thank those brothers who go and make that i'tikaf in the masjid, because they are absolving us of that responsibility. So it's a communal sunnah. And number three is the mustahab i'tikaf, recommended one, which is at any other time. Any other time, it could even be in the last 10 days. If you're not doing full 10 days, you're doing 3 days, the weekend only, that's also a nafal i'tikaf for you. And the difference between the wajib, an emphasized one, and the recommended one is that a wajib and emphasized one, you have to have a fast with it, and it has to be for like 24 hours, whereas the nafil one can be for a few hours or 2 minutes. Every time you go in the masjid, you should make an intention of i'tikaf. You'll get extra reward of being in i'tikaf. Fasting is a condition for the validity of the vowed spiritual retreat, which is the first one. If you made a vow that I'm going to do i'tikaf for 3 days, you can't just sit in the mosque. You have to have fasting with it. The minimum period of time to fulfill a voluntary retreat, the third type, is a moment, with its intention though. So we go into masjid all the time. If you just make an intention, you get that reward. As with all types of spiritual retreat, is valid only in a mosque of congregation. You have to have a masjid jama'ah. For men, it has to be a masjid in which congregations take place. Not just a place where people just go in sometimes and pray, but a place where 5 daily prayers are routinely performed. That's the place. So even it doesn't have to be a shar'i masjid, like a permanent endowment. It could be a musalla where 5 daily prayers have been taking place. Once in, one may not leave this place of retreat except for legitimate need based on the sacred law, such as to pray the Friday prayer in the main community mosque. So for example, if there are certain musallas, smaller prayer places, that have 5 daily prayers, but Jumu'ah only takes place in a larger place, in a larger masjid or larger hall, then it's permissible for this person to go just early enough to get there for Jumu'ah and then come back straight away. So that's a shar'i excuse for a worship that cannot be done there. It's going to be done in the main place, or for a natural need. So when we say going out of the masjid, we're not talking about the building. For example, people who are doing i'tikaf in retreat in our masjid downstairs, they're not allowed to come on this floor, because this floor is not masjid. It's part of the whole complex, and in general we call the whole place a masjid, but really masjid is that place which is dedicated as the prayer area. In some cases you call it jamaat khana, the musalla, the place where the prayer has been designated for, the place that's been designated for the prayer. That's why you have toilets outside, bathrooms. So that would entail going out of the masjid. So you just can't walk out there just for the fun of it, to the outside hall as well. It needs to be in the main area one needs to stay, unless they need to go out. Which means if they need to go out, they can go out too for natural needs. Natural needs here is talking about you. Natural needs here is only referring to urination and defecation, not for other natural needs and urges. So for example, if you were in an area where they didn't have a toilet at the masjid, you could actually go to the closest place that has a toilet, whether that's somebody's house or your house, just to relieve yourself and come back. But most masajid have toilets nowadays. Or due to an emergency, something happened in the masjid, there's a gas leak, may Allah prevent it and protect us, but something of that nature, some kind of commotion, had to leave, fire, whatever, then one can leave. In any of these cases though, he should immediately enter another masjid. Like, okay, you can't stay in this masjid, go to another masjid to continue your i'tikaf. If there were no valid excuses, then the spiritual retreat would be invalidated by his leaving the masjid. Otherwise, just go outside the masjid, it will be messed up. Now, this was primarily for men. For the women to do i'tikaf, the place that they normally designate for their prayer area at home is where they will do i'tikaf. So if any women are, inshallah, intending to make i'tikaf, then if they normally pray in a very busy place, then what they should start doing before Ramadan is to make another place that's going to be more suitable for them, like a bedroom or whatever it is, to be their place of i'tikaf, of their prayer. Then they can make that place as their place of i'tikaf. So the woman performs the spiritual retreat in that area of her house which she in general has designated for her prayer. I'tikaf cannot be done. One needs to come out of the state of impurity. If one has a wet dream, they must quickly perform ghusl. And likewise, menstruation or postnatal bleeding, one must be out of that to make i'tikaf. In terms of the place, the kind of masjid you can do i'tikaf in, some say it has to have 5 daily prayers. Some say it has to have an imam and a mu'adhin designated. So there are different conditions, but it's any place that is considered a mosque of some sort, where it's got a proper jama'ah taking place, imam, mu'adhin. It's not just a room that people come in arbitrarily to use. Like for example, at university, there's just the room that sometimes they use, sometimes they don't. It's a proper musalla. In fact, for each one of those places, there has to have someone. There has to be someone from that community who does i'tikaf. Otherwise, everybody's sinful for missing the sunnah. It's a smaller sin than missing a wajib or fard, but still, there is blameworthiness in that. How, if somebody did have this situation where, for example, in America, we had this situation, we had a musalla and we would make Jummah in a hall. So how much earlier can you go and how much can you stay there for? So one should leave for the main place of Friday prayer with enough time to just make the sunnah prayers before and after the Friday prayer. So enough time before the khutbah is about to begin to make 4 rak'ats. And then immediately return to the masjid of his retreat. If he remains in the main community mosque for his retreat, then it's, for example, let's just say that somebody was in a small masjid. They went to for Jumu'ah to the main masjid because Jumu'ah doesn't take place here. If Jumu'ah does take place here, they're not allowed to go. But if it takes place only in the big one, they went there and then they said, you know what, let me finish off my i'tikaf here. It's mildly disliked, but it is permissible to have a transfer. In general, it is recommended for a woman to designate a place in the house for prayers, just as it is recommended for a man to do so for his voluntary prayers in the house. To have a little masjid in the house, that's just a little area. The woman's retreat then should be in her designated prayer area. If she nevertheless did it in the masjid, it would be disliked but valid. Meaning, if there is a proper women's section in a masjid, like in some of the larger masjids, and they decided to just stay there for 24 hours, 48 hours or whatever, it's disliked, mildly disliked, but it is permissible. As long as, you know, as long as the arrangements are proper. You know, there's no intermingling, it's a proper women's area where no men go and so on and so forth. After, also her i'tikaf is not valid in any part of the house aside from her designated prayer area. If she does not have a designated prayer area, meaning that they pray anywhere really, you know, sometimes here, sometimes there, then it is not valid anywhere in her house. So that's why I said before that she should designate a place. She may, however, simply designate such an area in her house when she desires to perform the retreat. So she shouldn't be moving around the whole house. That's the idea. You designate one area and then you stay there for the amount of time that you're going to do i'tikaf. When performing the i'tikaf in a designated prayer area, she may not leave that area until the retreat is over, and except for the permissible reasons to go. Finally, she should get her husband's permission first before doing her retreat. Once he grants it to her, he is not allowed to renege on his permission and have intercourse with her. So if he gives permission, then he has to fulfill that, because it's not permissible to have intercourse and intimacy during i'tikaf. She's like in a masjid. Now what happens if you are in a masjid and you've got some business to take care of, like real business? You know, you do some buying and selling and one of your customers contacts you or something like that. What do you do? So inshallah, in the next sections we're going to be talking about that. It is permissible for the man performing the spiritual retreat in the masjid to eat, drink and sleep. That's part of human necessities. So he has to do that, otherwise, you know, how is he going to survive? It's makruh for other people to eat in the masjid or drink or sleep. So if you do feel like they're giving out some food in the masjid or whatever, then intend i'tikaf, even nafil i'tikaf. Or if you intend to just take a little nap on the side, you want to stay and wait for the next salat, just do an intention for a nafil i'tikaf. That justifies your eating, drinking and sleeping there. Or even buying or selling in the masjid, provided that the commodity for sale is not brought in the masjid. So it's just transactions, you're not opening up a shop in the masjid. You know, suddenly you come in Ramadan and mashallah there's like 5 shops there. To do so is makruh, disliked. It's also disliked for somebody in i'tikaf to just be silent. To just be silent. They have to be reading something, unless they're tired and just want to be silent, that's different. But thinking silence is a virtue, and just being silent is not good enough. You should read something, or do some dhikr, or to speak other than good. So one's conversations need to be measured. Okay, about the buying and selling, it is not disliked for one performing the spiritual retreat to conduct a purchase or a sale in the mosque if the transaction is for something he or his dependents need, as long as the commodity is not bought in the masjid. It is disliked, however, to conduct a transaction in the masjid if merely for his usual business. even if the commodities are not brought in the mosque. So you can't just do your everyday business in the masjid to carry on the business. This is only if your life and your livelihood survives on you selling that one thing every day. You have no money and you have to sell this so you or your dependents can survive, then you're allowed to conduct this transaction. So it's not for people who are, mashallah, getting a steady income, right? It would be permissible, for example, that if somebody is living on these checks, these dole checks or whatever they are, and there's some confusion, and now they got no money, and there's some confusion, they're asking for more information, it would be permissible for that person sitting in the masjid to deal with that kind of an issue to make sure he gets his money. You see what I'm saying? So it's only for the basic necessity, that level of business is allowed. Otherwise you're just doing your business. You're still in the dunya, if you're doing your usual business. If one makes a vow to perform the i'tikaf for a certain number of days, actually no, it is unlawful, haram, to have sexual intercourse or to engage in any foreplay. Moreover, the retreat is invalidated by intercourse or by ejaculation due to foreplay. So none of that is permissible during i'tikaf. If one makes a vow to perform the spiritual retreat for a certain number of days, he must remain in his retreat during the accompanying nights as well. You can't, a vow entails that you do a 24-hour i'tikaf from Maghrib to Maghrib. You can't just do it at night or just do it during the day. It has to be night and day together. That's for the wajib mandatory i'tikafs for taking an oath. Nafil i'tikafs are different. They can be just for a portion, for a few minutes, doesn't matter. This type of retreat in either case must be performed in consecutive days and nights, not separately, even if he did not explicitly stipulate consecutiveness in the vow. So if somebody said, I'm vowing to make 3 days of i'tikaf if this happens, and then that thing happened, you have to do 3 days together, even if you didn't stipulate that it has to be together. If he makes a vow for 2 days, he must perform his retreat for the accompanying 2 nights as well. So he has to go in before, because the nights in Islam are before the day. So I'm going to make i'tikaf for 2 days next week, after, you know, if it's outside of Ramadan, Tuesday and Wednesday, then I have to go in from Monday evening at Maghrib time, because the nights come before the day in Islam. Of course it's permissible for one to remain silent if he's just trying to guard himself from speaking, because he knows that every time he speaks to the others, he's going to talk about something strange and funny and not deeny, then he can be silent. But if one thinks silence itself is a virtue rather than reading something, then that's when it becomes makruh to remain silent. Okay, that ends that section. If you have any questions, now the other thing that I'd like to mention here is that one must realize what fasting is all about, and we must fast for the right reason. And I think many of us here who are not, majority of us here who are not converts, who have been fasting from a young age because it's something the whole family did and we started fasting before we really understood what fasting was all about. Oh, my parents are doing it, I want to do it as well. As we grow up, sometimes for some people, they never personalize it. They never bring any spirituality into it. They just do it because it's a fast. It's something we do during Ramadan, something Muslims do during Ramadan. And I think we must realize that fasting is a very great form of worship, which brings about forgiveness, which brings about cleanliness and purity, but it only does that if it's done with iman, if it's done with a pure thought of why we're fasting. So one must realize that we're doing it for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And fasting is done for Allah, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one who directly rewards for fasting. And the hadith mentions that whoever fasts with iman and with anticipation of reward, their previous all sins are forgiven. Same as Taraweeh. It's not just one of those things that you come to, that if you don't, people are going to say, you don't come for Taraweeh, you're such a bad Muslim you are. And thus we go. مَنْ قَامَ رَمَضَانَ إِيمَانًا وَاحْتِسَابًا غُفِرَ لَهُ مَا تَقَدَّمَ مِنْ ذَنْبِهِ. Whoever stands up in prayer during Ramadan with iman and with anticipation of reward, meaning they're doing it for Allah, not for anybody else, then all of their previous sins will be forgiven. Now let's look at it from a practical perspective. You're going to do it anyway. Why not have a good intention and make it for Allah? It will be so much easier to stand up for 1 to 1.5 hours. then we won't complain about the hafiz reading too slowly or too fast. Because it won't be just about, I have to do it because everybody's looking at me, and it's something that I feel guilty if I don't do, but I want to get it done as fast as possible. If you do it for the sake of Allah, then you will start enjoying it. It's a mind game at the end of the day. Why do some people enjoy the Taraweeh and some don't? They're both human beings. I think it's just like this resignation during the month of Ramadan, that look, this is that one month, let me just do my best. I need it. I really need everything that I can do. And what Mujaddid Al-Thani, Allama Sarhindi, what he had mentioned was that Ramadan, a moment of Ramadan has such a concentrated amount of rahmah and mercy and reward, that a whole year, you worship for the whole year, it can't give you that same amount for that one moment. So the amount of rewards that you can gain in every moment of Ramadan is something irreplaceable afterwards. So one must take as much benefit of it from it as possible. Likewise, during the month of Ramadan, we need to change our ways. One thing is we change our habits and we change a different schedule. But there are some basic things. The basics are, at least do the fara'id. If you can't do extra nawafil, you can't give extra charity, you can't sit and read too much Quran, at least make your 5 daily prayers, and at least fast, at least fulfill the obligations, and at least abstain from the harams. Don't backbite, don't swear, don't curse. So it's not just about abstaining food and drink. Those are just ideas. Those are just basic things that we're told to do to give us some idea and a habit of abstinence, so that we abstain from other things which should not be. Because food and drink is permissible in normal times. Sharia just makes it haram then for us. But what about those things that are haram from before? Why do we continue to do those? Maybe if Sharia had said that fasting is abstinence from food, drink and sexual intercourse and ghibah and backbiting and this, that and the other, we would have been, we're so mechanical, maybe we would have abstained then. So one must realize that it's more than just what it says. It's really for everything else. There's a story of a Sahabi that fell asleep before iftar, and when he woke up he continued to fast until the next day. As a result he fainted. Can you clarify this please? In the beginning there was no iftar to suhoor time. There was no Subah Sadiq, there was no Fajr time as the beginning. Your fasting began from the time you fell asleep. Right? So your fasting began from the time you fell asleep after Maghrib. So one Sahabi who'd been working all day in the fields, very tired, had come home at Maghrib time, and he said, let's have something to eat. Wife said, I'll go and fix something for you. Before she was able to come back with it, he fell asleep. So his second fast began. So he fainted. And upon that the ayah was revealed. فَكُلُوا وَاشْرَبُوا حَتَّى يَتَبَيَّنَ لَكُمُ الْخَيْطُ الْأَبْيَضُ مِنَ الْخَيْطِ الْأَسْوَدِ مِنَ الْفَجْرِ ثُمَّ أَطِمُّ الصِّيَامَ إِلَى اللَّيْلِ. And now eat and drink until the white thread of dawn can be distinguished from the black thread. It's just a metaphor for the whiteness of true dawn. So this one Sahabi, after his condition, after his situation, this law was relaxed. This was just an excuse from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It was a development in the fast. So that's where we get this suhoor time from for Fajr. That's when you stop. Can you do studying, university or paper-based work during i'tikaf? Yeah, if it's permissible, you have to do it, you have to do it. Oh, I see, and during i'tikaf. If you have to, and you got exams, for example, immediately after Ramadan or somewhere, and if you don't study, you're not going to be able to do i'tikaf. So yes, you would try to do some balance. Your primary thing should be worship, but if you had to do a bit of study, that would be permissible. But it has to be minimal. You're not sitting in i'tikaf in the masjid and just studying throughout, because there's an aspect of worship. How much is Sadaqatul Fitr? Some masjid say 85 pence and some say 250. I would go with the higher amount. There's many issues about this confusion, and I think where the confusion is coming from, it's all based on the 2.2 kilograms of wheat. Now what some people have done is that they've taken a bag of 20 kilograms of wheat and taken the price of that and then divided that by a kilogram price. So they get a very cheap price, because you buy 20 kilograms, that's what's going to happen. But the thing is that although many people, Asians, do buy 20 kilograms of flour, they don't buy 20 kilograms of wheat. If you are going to buy wheat for something, so you're going to buy a kilogram, 2 kilograms. Now if you go to buy a kilogram, 2 kilograms, it's going to be more expensive. Because at the end of the day, what it is that if you are giving wheat, I can understand you give 2 kilograms of wheat, because the guy will be able to make good porridge out of that. But if you're giving in cash, and you're giving them, what, 85 pence, what's he going to buy for 85 pence? A bar of Mars? Helps you to, what is it? Work, rest and play? Is that what you're going to give them? So, some people are going into some, you know, 20 kilograms and dividing it. At least go for a 2 kilogram bag and see how much that costs. So I would just say, look, it's at the end of the day, I think the higher amount is better. Because you're trying to help somebody here, you're not just begrudgingly fulfilling an obligation. The least that I can give is better. Although in other countries where it's cheaper, if you're giving it there, you can give according to that country anyway. The price of wheat in those countries. Why is i'tikaf in the mosque for women disliked as it was performed by the Prophet's wives? It was only performed initially, and then after that it was moved into the house. Initially they set up tents in the masjid, and then after that it was moved out. So it was not performed, the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, on a general basis afterwards. Right? Number one. Number two, it's disliked because of there's going to be men there as well, and it's disliked because of a number of factors. One obviously is the modesty aspect and the possible intermingling, especially if there's not proper, if there are no proper arrangements for the two separate areas. As I mentioned, that if it was a proper arrangement, then the ulama have allowed it with dislike though. Like, it's valid, but it's disliked, because it should be done in the house. Their salat is better in the house. The hadith is very clear about that. Their salat is superior in the house than in the Prophet ﷺ's masjid. So the i'tikaf would be similar as well. So yes, the wives did in the beginning set up their tents in the masjid, but after that it was taken away. And in the book of fasting, as prescribed by the Prophet ﷺ by Sheikh Albani, says i'tikaf for home for women is not valid. This is a very strange and abhorrent opinion by Sheikh Al-Albani, if it's correctly attributed to him. Right? I don't know where he gets that from, because in any of the madhabs there's no such thing that it's not valid in the house. If their salat is better in the house, what are they doing in a masjid in the first place? Right? So this is a very extreme opinion, unfortunately, which goes against the opinion of the overwhelming majority of the ulama. It seems like, and again, I don't want to blame him, because I don't have the quote in front of me. This is somebody else quoting him, and it could be a misunderstanding, could be a translation, a mistranslation. But if he's saying that it's etika for the home, in the home, is invalid for women, and that's his personal opinion, and it's not the opinion of the majority at all. Now you can imagine that if here they allowed women to do etikaf here, right? Can you imagine the freedom of the movement it would restrict for men? And you come to the masjid, oh, there's women upstairs, you know, there's people coming in and out for, you know, giving them stuff and things like that. It just gets, the arrangement is just not there, right, in our masjid anyway. But I'm just saying, even in general, it's not a good idea. And this is throughout the Muslim world, you don't see that it happens. If you're traveling on a plane and night falls during your journey, where do you break your fast? That's a very good question. You start and you end your fast according to the area you're in. So if you are here for Fajr time and you start traveling towards India, your fasting is going to be very small, because you're going into time there. So Maghrib is going to come up. So you don't worry about what time and look at your clock according to your time in London, but you actually will go according to your local time. So as soon as outside the window you see that it's sunset, you will break your fast. On the other hand, if you're going west, like you're going from here to California, you leave here about 12 o'clock in the afternoon, you'll get there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to have an 11 hour extra fast. It's going to be a very long fast. Can women leave the place of i'tikaf to take care of household duties such as cooking, etc.? If there's nobody else to cook, and she has to cook, then she can go and cook the basic minimum. She can't spend hours and hours doing, you know, big, lavish, sumptuous menus. She has to go and cook the minimum because there's nobody else to do it. She has to eat and somebody else has to eat. Intentionally going for sauna steam at gym, not allowed. I guess, the steam bath definitely would be problematic. And even the sauna. Swimming, obviously, you know, unless you're going to keep your head out of the water somehow. But that's kind of difficult, isn't it? You'll ingest some water, then it's makruh. Would swallowing a small amount of water during wudu require makeup or the fast? Yeah, anything that is felt going down the throat, knowing that it's going down the throat, it will, even if it's a small amount, will break the fast. Fasting starts Fajr time or the time from your local masjid. Fasting time starts at Fajr time. So unless you've got your personal inclination towards a, you've done some personal research and you are inclined to another degree and you're inclined to another timetable, then you follow that timetable. What I'm saying is just don't cause a big commotion with anybody else. If you don't have your personal timetable and you're just confused that why are there 2-3 timetables? Like some people, they came last year, they'd been watching Islam channel and the Adhan began while they were still eating their suhoor. Like, what's going on here? If you're confused about that, don't worry. There are 2 or 3 different opinions out there. You just go with your local one. But mashallah, if you are more advanced and you have studied this issue and you feel that this one is more important than the other one, then you go with that one. That's what I'm saying. Right? So just don't cause a big issue, but do the best for yourself. Because it's your worship at the end of the day. So if you want to go with the earliest time, please go with it. Because that is definitely more precautious. But don't make a commotion with anybody else. That's what I'm saying. Even if it's a husband and wife who have a different opinion, you can still get along. One just ends before the other. The wife, if she's doing the later one and the husband wants to do the early one, just give him food earlier on. Just keep it cool, just keep it nice. Okay, fine, we agree to disagree, there's polite disagreement. One can obviously try to convince the other one, but in a nice way, not causing a problem. When women do i'tikaf, does she have to stay in one room, and is it permissible for little kids to come in and out of the room to see their mother? Yeah, that's fine, they can come in and out, that's fine. But one needs to be careful that if they do have to tend to small children, run around the house and everything, then it's going to be very difficult, isn't it? So if you don't have somebody else to look after them, or you don't have a proper arrangement, then make proper arrangements. But absolutely, it is permissible for children to come in the room, as long as you don't spend too much time in playing with them only. Because the main focus is the worship. Because it's about cutting away, isn't it? About isolation. So if you're going to do the same thing anyway, it's not going to be as well. But yes, I mean, they can do it just like people come and visit their mu'takifin here and waste their time. They sit with them for 2-3 hours and just sit and laugh with them. You know, it's not, it's permissible, but it's not good to do that. A woman's husband is at the mosque to do i'tikaf and she is doing i'tikaf at home. Is it permissible to leave her designated prayer area in order to cook? To get her basic food, if there's nobody else to do the khidmah, then absolutely she can quickly go and do the basic cooking and go and eat in her place of i'tikaf. So she can only go and quickly cook and get back. Just like for the man as well, that there was nobody to provide food, they could go to the closest place to get some food and bring it back. Some school of thoughts or ulama have a ruling that it is permissible to go 10 minutes over the sahri time ending. Could you clarify? No, I think the confusion here, there is no alim that allows 10 minutes after. I mean, where do you get 10 minutes from? This is that confusion about that buffer zone. You know, where they tell you to stop 10 minutes before. So actually, the Fajr time is only beginning at 6 o'clock, for example. But they tell you to stop eating at 5:50 just so that if there was a mistake, you still have some time. So that means you can eat into that time until 6 o'clock. It's not that it's 6 o'clock, it's Fajr time, and then they allow you 10 more minutes. It's not the other way around, it's the other way around. So I think that's where this confusion is. And if there are some scholars who actually do say that you can go 10 minutes into Fajr, then bring them here. If a person researches into the issue of moon sighting and timetable, and Muslim scholars who are experts in the field say that what their masajid are following is wrong, and you know this as well, what does a person who knows do? Go against his locality or do what is he's correct? In fasting, you go, you do what you think is absolutely correct. But I said, don't cause a fitna. That's what I'm saying. You do what you think is correct, as long as you're following reputable scholars who are reliable. Because fasting is an independent thing. You don't have to tell the whole world what time you're finishing. Even if you come to the masjid one day, just stop eating early and go make tahajjud. Nobody's going to say, bye, kalo, kalo, kalo. You know, you're making tahajjud. I've seen it last year, you know, there are people who stop earlier. But they're doing khidmah themselves of the mu'takifin. They're feeding them. But they've stopped earlier. They're just not making a big deal about it. That's the best person, who doesn't make a big deal about it. But when it's the time to convince somebody and there's a chance, then that's different. For a hafiz who leads Taraweeh, who shaves his beard, can he lead it? And he does lead. Should you pray behind him? Because a person who shaves their beard would be considered openly sinning, right? Because it's, aside from the Shafi'i school who has some concession, the Hanafi school, it is sinful to shave the beard. It's makruh for such a person to lead the prayer. Now, if you've got no other option, that's the only place for Taraweeh, then you can pray behind them. But it's wrong to put somebody like that, who is shaved, to do the Taraweeh, because you're forcing everybody to pray behind them. But the Salat is valid, absolutely valid, doesn't have to be repeated. Do you have to do kafara if one breaks fast due to hunger or weakness while being pregnant? No. You know, whether you're pregnant or not, if you are extreme hunger, or you think it's going to be really bad or whatever, or you're going to go into some fits or something like that, extreme hunger or thirst, you can break the fast. Pregnancy will just be a bit more of an excuse, right? So yes, you can break the fast. You have to make a qada, but there's no kafara, there's no penalty for that. Regarding Friday and Saturday fast, is it true that if you fast Friday, you have to fast Saturday? You can't just do one. That's the normal situation, where in order for us to abstain from just specifying Friday, then you should fast Friday and Saturday, or Thursday and Friday. But as I mentioned, that if you've got a habit of fasting every 3 days or on this day of the month because you get time off or whatever, and that happens to be Friday, then it would be okay. But in a normal circumstance, you shouldn't specify just Friday, you should do it Friday and Saturday. Can one do qada fast on Friday only, as that's the only day that they have off from work? They can, if it's for convenience purposes. Can a woman open the door if she is alone at home or collect the mail from the post while in i'tikaf? No. Unless it's something necessary for survival that she needs to check out. But otherwise you can't. You can't move around just to open the door to see who it is. You can't do that. Is it permissible for a menstruating woman to enter a musalla, not a masjid? It is permissible to enter a musalla if she has to go there for a permissible reason, like for example, listening to a lecture or something, because there's a benefit of going there. Otherwise she should not go there. Like for example, in this place, because these three floors here that we're in right now are not masjid, they're musalla, they're like an extension area that's not shari'i masjid, then it's permissible for menstruating women to come there. If someone has a mouth bleed and accidentally swallows it, would that break the fast? Yes, if the blood is more, if it's more reddish than whitish, it would break the fast. But no kafara, just qada. Is there such a thing as part-time i'tikaf? There is. It's called nafal i'tikaf. You can do it for as long as you want. It's called nafal i'tikaf. That's the third category. If you have to make qada fast, when is it okay to wait for the winter where the time is short? Yes, you can. Absolutely. You can make all your qada fast up in December when the days are short. Can you select particular times in the year to do kafara during the winter months? Absolutely. If one's fast during the kafara breaks accidentally, does the kafara have to be restarted? Yes. It's very severe, brothers. Very severe. 60 days. Can you perform tahajjud jama'ah and qiyamul layl in the last 10 days? In the Hanafi school, it's makruh to do that. It's really as simple as that. In the Hanafi school, it's makruh to do tahajjud in jama'ah. Unless it's just like two people doing it privately, because you know they want to read to each other, they want to do their Quran or whatever. But as a big jama'ah, with like an announcement in a sense that people know that it's taking place, like making a big deal out of it, it's makruh to do that in the Hanafi school. In the Shafi school, it's completely fine. I know that many Hanafi ulama as well are kind of just doing it as well, right? That's up to them to do it. But I'm just saying in the Hanafi, because tahajjud is supposed to be a private affair. Tahajjud is supposed to be a private affair, it's not a congregation. It's something that you read for yourself in the calmness of the night, and then you make your dua, right? It's not about a jama'ah. There are enough jama'ah taking place already. There's taraweeh already in the month of Ramadan. There doesn't need to be another jama'ah for tahajjud as well. I know that sometimes for some people it encourages them, right, to come and join in. But they should just do it themselves. So in the Hanafi school, they've taken that kind of an approach. And I personally think it's a very good approach, because tahajjud, I think, is a very private matter. It's a private salat between you and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Can a woman in itikaf do a household work? Are you cooking and washing up? You need to have your 10 days of clothes ready. No cooking, cooking only to the basic, you know, there's nothing to eat. You can cook your basic amount, right? It's about minimizing that time. It's not about a normal routine that you just call an itikaf, right? And you just sleep in a different place. If you go to sleep after Fajr and have a wet dream, is your fast broken? Fast doesn't break with a wet dream. You just have to quickly get up and make ghusl. It doesn't break. Can a woman do itikaf in the kitchen? I guess she could if they made that. That's a good question. If it's a comfortable kitchen, and she made that her place of prayer as such, she could do it. But again, she can't just keep going into the kitchen for other things. But if there's like a large, you know, kitchen diner area or something like that. So let's make a quick dua, inshallah, and then can leave. اللهم انت السلام عليك السلام تبارك يا ذا الجلال والاكرام اللهم يا حي يا قيوم برحمتك نستغيث اللهم يا حنان يا منان لا اله الا انت سبحانك انا كنا من الظالمين جزى الله عنا محمدا ما هو اهله جزى الله عنا محمدا ما هو اهله جزى الله عنا محمدا ما هو اهله Oh Allah, bless us in these last days of Sha'ban so that we can get many things out of our way and prepare for Ramadan. Oh Allah, give us barakah during this time and in Ramadan so that we can take benefit from this month of Ramadan. Oh Allah, forgive us our sins. Oh Allah, do not let us come out of this month of Ramadan without being forgiven. Oh Allah, let it be the best of our year for us. Oh Allah, let us take advantage of it. Oh Allah, give us your mercy during this month and your forgiveness during this month. Oh Allah, make it easy for us. The days are going to be long. And the weather may be very hot. Oh Allah, make it easy for us. Give us the required energy and the strength. Oh Allah, give us the conviction in your faith to make it easy for us. Oh Allah, grant us tawfiq to do many good activities during this month. Oh Allah, make it a time of change for us so that we can enhance ourselves and improve ourselves. Oh Allah, forgive all of our sins. Oh Allah, grant us good character. Oh Allah, allow us to abstain from conflicts and disputes. Oh Allah, let this month be a time of love and affection and understanding between all of us and a time of unification. Oh Allah, solve our matters for us. Oh Allah, grant us knowledge, the knowledge that takes us closer to you. Oh Allah, make this course that we just had, make it a source of light and illumination for all of us and for other people as well. Oh Allah, allow us to imbibe everything that we have learnt. Oh Allah, to remove our ignorance. Oh Allah, accept it from us, accept it this Saturday morning that we've come together. Oh Allah, allow a lot of benefit to come from here. Allah, all of those who've helped to organize this class and have assisted in any way whatsoever, those who had an intention to and could not, oh Allah, bless all of them. Oh Allah, bless them and make this a source of Jannah for them, inshaAllah. Make this a source of their guidance, protection for them and for their children. Oh Allah, accept this from all of us. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun wa salamun ala al-mursalin walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.